Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fun with Dumb. This is one of the Korean episodes broadcasting live from Collab Asia Studio. Thank you for letting us use the studio. We're traveling right now, and this is my travel partner, Donnie Kwok. He is the GM at Complex Media, producers on shows such as Desus versus Mero, Sneaker Shopping, all of the internet great shows. How you doing, Donnie?
I'm doing great.
How do you feel that I dragged you to work with me on our vacation?
I feel like it's part of being friends with you. You're a very ambitious person.
Oh, thanks, man. You're not getting paid either way. but I am here joined today by a person that I've had on my list to have on the podcast, but she resides in Korea, so that's a little tougher when I have overseas guests because I don't like doing the Zoom interviews. I like doing all the interviews in person. It's more personable. She's an amazing content creator with a meteoric rise on YouTube. An amazing storyteller, and I'm drawn to storytellers more than just like internet content creator, someone who's really crafting a story. And she's a restaurateur who just opened up a brand new restaurant in Seoul, and you can follow the whole journey from its inception on YouTube. Her name is Tina Choi, aka Doobie Doobop. How you doing?
Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah, let's get the energy here.
Hi, sorry. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
No, this is my honor. I've listened to your music since I was very young.
Oh.
So I think one of my earliest videos that I edited was actually Woke Up So Dizzy.
Oh, yeah, cell phone.
Cell phone.
Yeah.
So this is a very cool moment for me.
I appreciate that. Cell phone featuring Wax and Breezy Lovejoy, who is now Anderson .Paak. Yeah.
Streaming on Spotify.
So make sure you run that up. No, I didn't know that. So that's amazing. I appreciate that. And thank you for coming on the show. I know you're really busy because you just opened up a restaurant. How long ago was that?
May 6th, and it has been super crazy. We're very, very young, and like we're still building the team, so feels like a lot of obstacles to still overcome.
Yeah, and it's only been 2 months, and so you've been updating your content based around opening this restaurant in like real time.
For sure, yeah.
That's wild. For those who aren't familiar with your content, you started about 3 years ago.
Yeah, I want to say, I think I really started like 2021 in February was when I started. So it's been about like 2 years and a half now, almost 3 years. Wow, like time flies. I started in the pandemic, and I started on TikTok initially with cooking. And then I transitioned over to YouTube. And now I'm doing more brick and mortar with the restaurant as well. So it's been a crazy experience for sure.
Yeah. But you have experience in food. You went to Cornell University.
Yeah.
And majored in food science.
I did.
Okay, what is food science? What does that entail?
It's a lot of science, and it's, you know, I always tell people that, you know, we're actually technically kind of engineers, but then I get laughed at, so I never say that, except now. But we're under the engineering department. It's a lot of science. So I was on the pre-med track because my family was, they were both doctors. My parents are both doctors, so it was like the natural path that they thought that I was going to take. But it really just didn't feel like the right fit for me. So I knew that I always loved to eat and like cook as well. So I changed my major to food science, like my third year, and then stuck with it.
Wait, so did you start creating content when you were still in school? Or
no, it was right after graduation, and it was like in the heart of the pandemic. So I'm a 2020 May grad. So up until then, I was just applying to a bunch of jobs and just not having a lot of luck. So it was a tough time, like, because even interviews weren't even being done. And a lot of times, you know, I was looking for like lab work, and that's where my background is in, but all the labs were closed. So, you know, it was really, really tough time, I think, for young graduates. Like, and we had no clue like when this was going to end. So it was a scary time.
What was the first piece of content you did? Do you remember?
Yes, I did. I think like a Korean fried chicken was my first. Oh, no. Sorry. It's a steak donburi video that I first made. And I like look back on it. And it's so bad. Like I cringe so hard.
You were cooking.
Yeah, it's cooking, like no talking, just ASMR, because I'm kind of a shy person. Like, and I didn't feel so comfortable like letting out my personality on the internet. Like I knew I can cook, but the editing, you know, the personality, like I just felt that I wasn't confident enough.
It's like you're figuring that out.
Yeah, I was figuring out my voice, I think, back then.
Right, right. And you know, you're talking about the science element with this major. So kind of break that down. What's the science part of it? Is it breaking? No, I mean, I'm just curious.
I didn't know this was a career show.
I'm very intrigued by food science. It's like you're talking about labs. You're working with like flavors and how it affects human body or, you know. Mm-hmm.
I think anything that you get in the grocery store, it has to go through the hands of a food scientist. Like there's three ways. There's like the safety element, there's the business element, there is the more science aspect of it. So it could be, you know, molecular engineering, making sure that, you know, how shin-ramyun stays fresh, shelf stable for almost years and years and years. So it's a very interesting subject.
The food science behind spam. I'd be interested in how...
It's good. You know? That's what matters.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's probably been a lot of developments in that world in the recent years, right? In food science.
Yeah.
There's like a show on Hulu that's about like the future of food with David Chang too, that I've seen. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
When you went to, so you started with kind of the short form and then moving to YouTube and doing longer form. Like how did that decision come about? You felt kind of constrained maybe by, or you were starting to open up more and wanted to?
I was really broke and like I had to make money.
Yeah.
And you know, when I started TikTok, I was living with my ex-boyfriend at the time, and like I was really not happy in that relationship. I'm so sorry. Like, so I'm really sorry. But you know, it takes two to tango.
Right, right.
So I knew that like I wanted to like, and then I like we broke up, and then I moved back to Korea, and I moved in with my parents back then, and like I love my parents. I didn't live with them for a very long period of my life. I went to boarding school since I was middle school, so I spent almost 10 years away from them.
Oh, so they always lived here?
They always lived in Korea, so I would go back and forth.
Right.
And I was like pretty independent. I'm also an only child, but still, like I missed them, so I came back. But it's really tough, like living in the same house with your family if you haven't lived with them for 10 years. Especially, you know, if I'm trying to film content, like I would be filming content and my mom would be doing like laundry upstairs, or like my dad's drilling something outside. Like it was hectic, and I knew like I can't live like this.
Well, they kind of became characters too in your content.
They did. Yeah, they did. But you know, there were some parts where they wouldn't be so comfortable filming as well, and I knew that I needed to find my own space, like almost like a studio as well for like the next chapter. So it made the most sense. YouTube paid the most, and for me, like I never wanted to be a YouTube star or whatever the word is.
You're a star.
Yeah. but you know, it was never like a goal of mine. It was something that I did to make ends meet for me.
Well, let me say, so, you know, in the past 3 years, that's a pretty fast rise as far as like the amount of numbers you've garnered. Every video that you put out and things are starting to grow exponentially. Did you feel like I'm gonna have to really push it in this next video to even grow that even more? Like, did you keep like doing that? Like make things bigger and bigger every time?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think also like I'm kind of the personality type that's not very thankful with things, but in the flip side, you know, I'm never satisfied, so I always like to keep on pushing, and I get tired of things really easily, and my boyfriend hates hearing this, but...
Your current boyfriend.
My current boyfriend, yeah. Not my old one.
The one she's actually happy with.
Yeah, the one I'm very happy with.
What's up, Fun With Dumb listeners? You know that feeling that you get when you find that one item that you've been looking for online? You spend hours researching, reviewing and reading thousands of comments, reviews and ratings just for that one specific item. Whether it's a litter box for your cats, a new blender, a new graphics card for your computer, whatever it may be. You go through your mental checklist, checking off all the boxes, and it's 5 stars. Oh, and it gets to your doorstep within 48 hours? Why is it that a random, wonderfully reviewed item from halfway across the world, it could reach us in 2 days, but when it comes to finding a good doctor, it seems like booking an appointment takes forever? Well, thanks to ZocDoc, the free app, that problem is no more. ZocDoc is a place where you can find and book your appointment with a doctor near you who usually have appointments available in the next 24 hours. I'm talking about booking appointments with the top-rated, actual patient-reviewed doctors and specialists where you could specifically filter through the ones that take your insurance, the ones that are nearest to you, that can treat pretty much any condition that you're going through. If I had an ailment, this app is definitely something I'd be using. Go to ZocDoc.com/dumb, download the free app, and book and find your doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/dumb. ZocDoc.com/dumb. And now back to the episode.
But yeah, I think like for me, YouTube is really like good for me because I can try out a bunch of different things. Right. It's kind of like a starting point. Right. It's something where, you know, I'm 25, so I don't want like YouTuber to be like the end of my profile. Like it's great job. It's a really hard job. And it's also a job that entails like 10 other jobs as well. But for me, I really wanted to kind of add on to my portfolio and just build like my character, I guess.
It was like a one person team though with your content, right? Like
with the content now, I have an editor that I work with extensively, and her name is Yejin. God bless her. But before, for the longest time, it was just me and I was editing alone. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting thing you're talking about. Kind of feeling a little bit lower stakes, because I guess if you're into TV and film production and you're plotting out a season, you have to really, you can't experiment too much. Mm. You know what I mean? And YouTube kind of gives that opportunity to experiment. How much pressure do you feel when you make a new YouTube video? Is there any pressure, like, or do you feel pretty loose, like, okay, I can try something completely different?
I think the pressure is always there. And I think it's the reason why most people almost always burn out on YouTube, because it's one of the only jobs where you can see your competitor, like how they're doing in exact numbers in real time as soon as you upload.
Are you
right?
Competitive?
I am very competitive, unfortunately. Yeah.
I see. Yeah, no, that's interesting, actually. I didn't think about the real-time element of the pressure. Yeah. It's not like necessarily like, oh, the pressure to compete for like an Emmy for, you know what I mean, like a TV show or something, but it's the constant changing of the numbers and going from one, number one and two is like teetering all the time, I feel.
So do you kind of base, you know, like obviously some videos will perform better than others and take those learnings and kind of shape, or are you just, I'm doing what I want and not going to be swayed, I guess, by...
I think the only child in me, I don't like listening to what other people want me to do. Like when people say like, oh, this is great, I want to see more of this, there's a part of me, there's this little evil part of me that's like, you. I don't want to do that just because you told me to.
I'm
the boss around here. So I think that also that's like the thrill of it. Like when you try out something new, like I think if I just stayed with one concept, like for example, when I was only doing like TikTok ASMR food videos, like when I started talking over them, like people would be like, shut the up. I just want to see you cook. So if I just like listened to that, like I wouldn't be where I am. So like I don't think what people say really matter, and you just have to like believe in your heart.
Yeah, I do hate that when someone gives you like a suggestion, idea that you're already kind of thinking, and it makes me not want to do it at that point.
Exactly.
I'm like, bro, I know. You know, like I'm not. You know what? Just for that, I'm not gonna do that. No, I feel that. That's.
Was there like a certain pivot in time where you made the conscious decision to kind of venture a little bit beyond food and start opening like your personal life? And because you're kind of transparent, right? Like with what you're doing, what you're feeling, things that you're going through. Was that part of the plan, I guess? Or maybe there wasn't a plan, but like, how did that?
I think like, I'm pretty like, I'm a very like analytical person, I think, more than a creative person. I saw that being personal, like in my like shorts, you know, I started doing like the personal stories because I was making TikToks and I looked at the YouTube shorts audience and they're a little older, they have a longer attention span and they kind of want to like learn something at the end of the video, even if it's a shorts. Mm. So I saw that and I kind of started sharing a little bit about myself as a segue into, you know, introducing who the person is behind the camera, the hands of the person that's like cooking the video, to kind of, you know, incorporate my personality, because I knew that I can cook, but there's so many other people who can cook much better than I do. So after that, I think like there's also a certain limit as to how many stories that are fitting into 59.6 seconds as well. So I think the vlogs were kind of a glimpse into my life. A lot of people were curious, but it was like the further, you know, glimpse into it. Like a lot of people who were watching on shorts, listening to the personal stories, like if they're like, oh, I wonder who this girl is, how she lives her life. It's not as compact. It's not as, you know, in 59 seconds, but it's more like just a glimpse. So I think I try and be transparent with my feelings. And I think also in order to communicate with the audience, like it's a very necessary part to, you know, share a part of yourself, because that's kind of the selling point for a lot of vlogs. You know, yeah. I share a part of my life as entertainment.
Right. Mm.
Was there a point where that decision was hard to make, being like, I'm going to put my relationship in the spotlight?
I think it was hard, but at that point, like it was also during COVID and I had just moved to Seoul and I was living alone and I didn't have that many friends. So I was also very lonely. And I think for me, I didn't make it thinking like, oh, hundreds and thousands of people are gonna watch me. This was just like me like shouting into a void that somehow made profit.
It's a tough balance to see, you know, be vulnerable, but also feel like, is this going to get some sort of negative reaction? You know, like I have a bit, like I do stand up and I had this bit recently that I did and I'm like, it's kind of edgy, right? So I'm like playing it for like 20 of my homies to make a decision on if I want to post it.
You're going
to
play for her now?
No, I'm not going to play. I don't want
to. I want to hear it now. Play it now, right here.
But it's a tough decision because there's no reward without risk too. You know, and there's a part of it, like, I feel like it will do well and it will maybe get the reaction too. But how do I balance that? I feel like, and I'm ashamed of myself at times for being so scared to take that step already to begin with. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's embarrassing a little bit when I was like more bold at some point in my life to just be like, fuck it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think it's also the reason why it really like messes with a lot of people's mind. Like when you do YouTube for a long time and it's only based on your personality and your journey solely, it can be, you know, when I receive feedback on a vulnerable video, it affects me a lot more than a come eat with me like mukbang video, you know what I mean? So I get you 100%, and I think it's like a delicate balance. Like sometimes, you know, I will share some of the things, but now like I think I keep a part of myself also, and that parasocial relationship is great, but you know, this is also work at the end of the day, and like my mental health is also very important, and yours too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just scary. I just feel like we live in a more like less of a forgiving society now.
I would say she seems like a pretty unproblematic person.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
I've gotten tangled in some issues.
I mean, I've read about that, and, and it's that's what I mean. It's
I didn't even know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think if you're gonna be that vulnerable or just putting out content regularly in a week, like people are gonna make mistakes once in a while.
For sure.
Like
for sure.
That's bound to happen. You know, I mean, and that's what I mean, the whole less forgiving society, because not everyone's going to also see your apology, you know, and they're just going to see the part where you're problematic. So it's just it's a tough decision. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your restaurant a little bit too. Is it pronounced Mija or Mija?
Mija. Oh, Mija. You're so Spanish.
Yeah. But it stems from the Spanish word Mija, right?
Yes and no. Okay. I think it's like a double meaning for me. Okay. Like Mija is a very like old school Korean name. It's kind of like equivalent of like Betty.
Gotcha.
Or like Pamela, and I mean not Pamela because of Barbara is a good one. Yeah. Yes. So very old school, and it's also the name of my dog, and I have a Jindo, so it's easy to pronounce, and also the Miha element of, you know, this warm feeling like my daughter, and it is our baby in a sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was.
Where is the restaurant?
It's on Gyeonggi-dangye, right beneath Namsan in Itaewon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you started off this couple months ago opening this, but it was way before 2 months ago that you started the process of building out, contracting, and you talk about this problem that you've had with the landlord.
Yes.
Could you break that down? So what happened?
I don't think I can delve too much into
legal
issues, but I found out that, you know, this type of issue is very prevalent in Itaewon.
Okay.
And Itaewon was actually not my first choice. I live in Seongsu currently, so it was around that area, but there's something called a handover fee in Korea called 권리금. If you know what that is, it's super expensive in Seongsu, and Seongsu is popping right now. So handover fee itself is basically, you know, you want the spot and the previous tenant is saying, you know what, I made this place like pop, so I deserve 100K just for giving up my rights of renting. And then that's not including rent or the deposit. And then the deposit's another 100K. And then, you know, rent is very, very expensive. So I was like, okay, that's way out of my budget. So
I was just hearing that yesterday, that Seongsu is super popping, like the hottest neighborhood.
Yeah.
You're over it now because you...
It's just, I think, like, I live right by Seolsu. It's fine. I live right by Seolsu. It's okay. Everyone knows.
No, it's fine.
Everyone knows, actually. I live right by it. So, like, the park itself is beautiful. But then in front of it, it's just, like, I have 10 cafes in, like, one... Like, and I take, like, 10 steps out of my apartment. So there's no place to eat. It's always crowded. And there's only coffee shops. And I can't dress like sloppy because everyone's, you know, picture perfect makeup, everyone's taking Instagram photos, and I'm like, oh my god. And you know, it's a lot to take in. I don't know, I think it's also like a very like fast risen neighborhood as well. It's like bakeries, cafes, pictures, Instagram. But it's gonna also, like, it's a bubble. It's also gonna pop so quick because there's no restaurants. It's just gotten gentrified way too quick also. So Seongsu, overrated.
I mean, it seems like you're learning how business works out here in real time too. You're learning about new laws and stuff. Is this stuff that you've kind of asked your parents about, or just kind of learning and hitting walls and learning from those mistakes and stuff?
I think my parents, not at all, because like they've been doctors forever. They are a very, very different type of person than I am. You know, they like structure. They like being in the same boundary. My dad has been in the same space for the last 25 years.
Right.
And my mom doesn't like being a business owner. So she did have her practice once, but she likes being an employee now. Like, she likes working, you know, 9 to 5 and not having to think about work after 5. So, you know, when I was taking on these projects, they didn't understand. And when I was running into these problems, they had no solutions. So I was kind of left out cold. And it was a bit sad because I was sharing this story because I know that it happens a lot to a lot of foreigners in Korea. But it was kind of met as like, oh, like, you're so privileged thinking that you can do this. So it was a little sad,
I think,
when, you know, the people that I thought like supported my journey, like, slightly turned on me. But I think it's also has to do a little bit with a lot of female vloggers and female online presence on the internet. Yeah, it was weird.
Wait, meaning what? There's too many incels on the internet, I think.
Seeing like successful people, like women, is something like still, you know, I think a lot of people
find it off-putting.
There's a lot of that in the pod space as well.
Really?
Yeah, because we have a female co-host on my pod,
mm-hmm.
and it's like you see the hater comments for nothing too. It's like
crazy. I mean, it is how it is, and I don't think it's, you know, on the flip side, maybe I also did benefit from me being a female as well. But you know, you can't think of it like that, and I think it's a little sad. And you know, I don't see it just for myself. I also see it for other very successful female entrepreneurs and also female like online presence as well. It's a little sad to see, I think. But you know, I think the space space is definitely changing as well. And like, what matters is like, there's other like people who like watch it and be inspired. So I think it's okay. I also like don't really get that affected by comments and stuff.
What was opening a restaurant part of your plan for years, or is that something that just came about after you started making the content? Like, this is the ideal next step.
I think actually before content, like I've always wanted to own a little farmer's market stall. Like back when I was in like Ithaca, I wanted to like make my own kimchi or something. Like that was like a little dream of mine. And maybe, you know, if I make it, like I'll go to like New York and I will, you know, I'll be on the Union Square Farmer's Market if I really make it. You know, that was my dream.
That's funny to hear if you're a parent hearing that from your kid. I want to own a farmer's market stall where I make my own artisan kimchi.
Yeah, I'm like a nerd at the end of the day, you know? Like, I love fermentation. I love food. And that's where it started. And, like, YouTube kind of, like, somehow, like, happened. And I think I, like, went back to what I always wanted to do. But I didn't have any, like, ins into it, because like I worked at a restaurant, like I worked part-time at a restaurant when I was in college for fun. I never cooked professionally and I never went to cooking school, but then my partner, like he is Michelin trained from Denmark at a old restaurant called Relay, and he operated a farm there as well. And when he moved over, it really made the most sense for us to work together to open a new space. So we were thinking, you know, I also needed a studio space to like cook as well. Like my fridge was overflowing and I needed a new space. And we were thinking, oh, why not some like pop-up dinners on Fridays and Saturdays, like casually? And then, you know, it kind of grew and grew and grew and grew. And I think we got more and more ambitious with it as well. So it kind of transformed. It wasn't something that we dreamt of for years, but it was what made the most sense and what felt the most fulfilling once we started it.
What I mean, I don't know if you how you would know this, but what would you estimate, like, of the people who have come into the restaurant since it opened are there based on following you as a creator? Like, what percentage?
I think initially it was like 100% for the first month, I want to say. Maybe like one or two people that wasn't out of like 200 people, like in the first 2 weeks. But now I think it's shifting almost like 85-15. Like 85 is still subscribers. It's a little crazy because a lot of people also book their reservation and then book their flight tickets as well. So very mind-blowing. It's really, really nice to be able to connect with everyone as well, because, you know, it's very one-sided. It's not like concerts where you see the audience in front of you. For me, like, I had never known, especially me being in Korea, where my subscriber, like Korean subscriber, is like under 1%. So it was really interesting to see like everyone and be able to, you know, give them a taste of our food and stuff.
Do you feel obligated to kind of like shake hands and kiss babies and stuff, you know, on the floor of the restaurant all the time since they're there for you?
True.
Sometimes, but I think I'm really happy at the end of the day. Like, I'm really thankful. Like, these are people who made the effort to come all the way. And we're on top of a hill. So, you know, they walk all the way up. They're really sweaty. Yeah. And they're really tired and hungry. But they always have a smile. They're happy to be there. And I think for a lot of people, because they saw, like, the journey, you know, they saw the gigantic sewer on the bottom of the floor and how the walls looked before.
Right.
You know, I think for them, it's really, really meaningful to see that the place that they've been following along for a couple of months, like in actual real life time, and also be able to see, you know, try the food. So
I mean, to give an idea of how the, you know, the reservations are booked out, like how far in advance are they?
Almost till end of October right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So wow.
How many tables are there?
We're small. We do around 35 seatings a night, and we're open 3 days a week, so around like 120 people.
It's the hottest ticket in Seoul, guys. and besides the side concert. No, that's really amazing. And you know, I gotta really commend you, because I feel like for me, my style is like, once I start seeing a lot of success and I have managers and my team just really wanting to move fast, you know, and I get scared. I'm like, let's actually slow down a bit. Mm-hmm. And it seems like for you, it's just been like one step to the next. And now it's like a restaurant within the 2.5, you know, plus years. So, I mean, were you ever frightened maybe of like how fast things are moving?
I think I'm the opposite. Mm. When things are the same for a while, I get itchy, I think. Like, I think, like, am I lagging behind? Like, what's the next step? What's the next push? Like, when something does well, like, when I was doing well on YouTube for, like, for shorts, or, like, you know, I was like, how am I going to do long form? I think I'm, like, I don't know. I was grown with pretty strict parents, so yeah. I think I always felt inadequate.
You can share that here.
Yeah.
No,
maybe,
but
maybe they'll watch this.
Yeah. Mom, you made me like this. No, I'm kidding. But I think it's in my nature. I love change and I love trying new things. I also don't have a management team that tells me to do anything. Like, keep it really to myself. I keep it very trim. So I'm able to really switch up if I decide to do something. You know, it doesn't take a whole team or, you know, a couple months to do it. I love being able to be, like, spontaneous and do something if I feel like doing something. Yeah.
How on the pulse are you about the food scene? Just whether it's locally in Korea or internationally.
Well, what do you mean on the pulse?
On the pulse of,
like, new restaurants,
trends, I guess. Trends too.
Mm. I think I'm a little bit behind, actually, because I'm so busy tending my own shit. You know, I also have a garden upstairs, so it takes up so much work. We, like, 80% of all the veggies that we serve in the restaurant, like, we're also, it's not just the restaurant that we're operating. We have a little, like, urban farm or, like, weeding. So honestly, I haven't been out eating out a lot. I do, like, read up on it, definitely. But it's, yeah, I think I'm a little out of the loop. But I think I like that, though. You know, it's, like, the same as if you start listening to too many people's, like, music, you also are like, oh, maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do this. You know, sometimes you just got to, like, lock yourself in a room and just focus on what you want to do. And I think that's, like, what I'm going through also with the identity of Mijasoul as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. What are some of your what's your top three banchans?
Top three banchan?
Yeah, banchan side dishes.
Your goat banchans, if you will.
I love mirchibokkeum.
Mirchibokkeum,
yeah,
okay.
Mirchibokkeum.
That's anchovies, marinated anchovies, or what is that?
Stir-fried anchovies, yeah. With nuts. I think I like a little salty, sweet, and nutty. Like, that hits all the spots for me.
Gotcha.
I like jjimmiche also. That's the dehydrated squid dressed in spicy gochujang glaze as well. Mm-hmm. And then the third, I mean, kimchi is not actually a banchan, so I can't say.
It's not?
No.
It's
a separate category of its own. There's rice, there's guk, which is soup, and then banchan, and then kimchi. That's, like, what constitutes a Korean meal. So kimchi is different from banchan.
Oh, I did not know this. Did you know this?
I mean, it makes sense, I guess. It's kind of like a separate thing of its own.
Oh, does it make sense?
Oh, that was very sassy. I guess
no, it's UNESCO heritage dish.
Yeah. I mean, I've always liked just gongnamul, you know, shigumchi. I like very just the standard.
The namuls.
The namuls. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the namuls. How about you? What's your favorite banchan?
Potato salad.
what's true, though.
Do you know any history about the potato salad banchan? Like,
it's from Japan.
I see.
Yeah, so potato salad, you know, the English, the big English influence during Meiji Restoration from Japan, and then during colonization, it transferred over.
Ah, I see. What's your style of cuisine right now at your restaurant?
We do Korean, but definitely a little more.
I'm asking this specific.
I'm just chuckling, sorry.
I can do this again. Yeah, yeah. But we do Korean, but more produce driven, because like, we have the farm upstairs as well, and we try and source from, like, organic farmers. So definitely not super traditional in our take on it, and more like a farm to table approach.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no, it was really cool seeing the process of you choosing out the cutlery, the plates, the plating and all that. I mean, how did you separate the time in the work that goes into building a restaurant, from the menu to the interior? Like, was that all going on at the same time?
I think so, yeah. I think the menu was something that we had been working on since even before we signed the contract. Like, it was something that we were always testing out. Interior is, it happened. It always is going to take a lot longer than you're going to think, I think. Like, it takes twice as long. even like, I think it's the little things that I didn't think about that really confounded me. Like, it's like, you know, like, what paper do I use? Like, where do I get these papers? Also in Korea, like, these shops are very, very niche as well. Like, you have a paper guy, you have a box guy, you have like a condiment box guy, like, and these are not all in like all in one place, like, or on Amazon. Like, it's, you have to really go and source these out and like do the market research. So I think that was really difficult because none of us had experience in the kitchen in Korea, so it was kind of learning from scratch. But, you know, we figured it out though, you know.
What's the response to like kind of modern takes on Korean dishes out in Korea?
I think it's a mix. Honestly, like, we've had some older patrons that come in as well, like a lot of people who brought their parents. Surprisingly, like, the older Korean generation really loved it because we're very vegetable focused as well. We don't use that much meat. But then amongst the younger like generation, it hasn't been so great. Like, for Korean people who like don't know who I am. Oh, that sounded bad. Like, do you even know who I am? Yeah. But like, you know, like, who first like get the dish without like understanding like what we're trying to achieve, I think it's like, oh, why is it so many vegetables? You know, the meat is really too thin. So, you know, I was thinking, a lot of people also had made a reservation thinking that Kevin was going to be making like Italian or French dishes as well, but then was making Korean food. So it was like very like, what is happening? Yeah, a bit. But I think they're very like, in the core of it are quintessential Korean techniques as well, and we're just using different ingredients and slightly more just different approach to it. Yeah, so nice. it's a mix. Some people like it and we can't please everyone.
What is your take kind of on around when you started making the food content, just the complete explosion of food content everywhere and TikTok, YouTube, like, it's kind of oversaturated now, maybe a little?
I think so. But I think when I first started, there really wasn't a lot of us, I think. Like, and it was the biggest reason why I started posting on TikTok as well, because like, I knew that the barrier of entry to TikTok was a lot lower. Like, it was home cooking. That's what people were looking for. It was very, you know, it wasn't like super fancy at all. Like, you didn't need all this gear. So like, it felt very like the most natural process for me to showcase like what I can do. But back then, like, I used to do a lot more complex recipes as well, like recipes that would take a week or even 2 weeks as well, because I had like something to prove, you know. Yeah. I'm not a chef, but like, your girl can cook, you know. I had to show that.
Yeah. Did you were you watching like food content on television, on the internet? Were there any creators you were already following before?
Definitely. I think that's all I watched. Now I can't watch it because it's my job. Like, but yeah, I think that was all I was watching. I think like my influences were very like old school, like Alton Brown, like Good Eats was like my jam, because I love science and like the way he explained it was very fresh as well. And for like content creator, I like loved watching Eddie Huang so much. And Vice, like Munchies, as well as some Korean creators. So it was very like different takes on food. Like, it was very different styles, but all based around food.
Yeah. Yeah. Has your food science degree helped out in your cooking, or?
I say no, but in a way, I think it does. Like, in the back of my mind, I think like, oh, this is what should make sense. You know, if I caramelize this in high heat, this is gonna probably taste good, you know. But I think they're also, you don't have to have a food science degree in order to do it. So it's like, yeah, but is it worth the money? No.
Yeah. So you are a food scientist.
That's a wild
title, by the way, a food scientist.
A bit. I wouldn't coin myself as that necessarily. But yeah, baseline of it, you know, if all fails, maybe I will.
It's like me calling myself a rhyme scientist.
You are?
Yeah.
I've never called myself a rhyme scientist. Right?
Do you even have, I'm trying to picture you, like, your content consumption now, like, with all that you're doing, I can't imagine you just like scrolling TikTok for an hour on a lazy moment.
Sometimes I do, but I think like I never spend time on like Instagram and like YouTube really anymore. Like, for me, like, it's, I also like never carry my phone anywhere, because like, for me, like, it's kind of like a part of work. But like TikTok, a little different because like I love looking at interior design right now. It's so nice. And I'm just like, wow, I'm just like pinning everything. Pinterest, I've been spending a lot of time on, and I feel like a Midwestern, like suburban mom, but I'm in that era right now. Nice. Yeah.
What are some other interests that you have besides, you know, being a restaurateur? Are you planning to do a product line of some sort? Or?
I'm definitely interested. Like, I'm testing out a few things. I'm testing out a few things, but I feel like it's a little bit of a distant future for me just because with like CPG products, like I really want to make sure it's a banger before I like release it out. I do not want to do like another salt brand by another person. So I want it to be something truly special. So we're testing a few things out, and hopefully in the near future, I'll be able to.
Nice. Yeah. You eat fast food?
I love fast food.
What's your favorite fast food?
McDonald's. Easy.
McDonald's, what's your items?
I love... Honestly, right now, I'm in my apple pie phase.
Oh, apple pie.
Yeah.
Just plain apple. I mean, just the apple pie.
Apple pie and sundae, like, or the ice cream, like soft serve.
Mm. A la mode. Yep. Yeah.
I just crush it up and eat it, and it's disgusting. I love it.
Well, even with your food science degree, you don't hesitate on eating any, you know, preservation. What was it? Preservatives.
Yeah, preservatives.
I'm not a food scientist, all right? I am not a food scientist. But yeah, does that ever, you know, stop you from eating some of the like fast food stuff?
Nah, everything in moderation is okay, you know, like,
yeah. Dude, she's 25.
Yeah, you can eat whatever, like, you know, want. I'm not doing drugs, you know. Yeah. I'm very responsible, so this is my vice. Like, everyone needs a little vice.
Nice. Yeah, you seem very mature. I mean, you're already resting.
You know what, honestly, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I feel like you are very tranquil. Like I said that when I first saw you, but as I'm listening to you speak, you have this energy of like a super overachiever, like the type of girl when you're in high school and you look at and you're like, this girl has everything together, is so focused.
Reese Witherspoon in Election energy,
but a dark side is lingering somewhere.
No, she
got Greta Thunberg energy, you know. She's passionate.
It's really amazing how much you've achieved. Like, it's really, congratulations. I mean,
Yeah.
At 25, I mean, at 35, there's going to be, I mean, it's like, it's a crazy trajectory.
Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't peak already.
Were you into student body or anything?
Elementary school, I did.
What would you?
I was a vice president school of the, like, this whole school. Like, but it, I like literally did nothing other than like to the Korean anthem.
You know
it? That's all I know. So that was the end of my job.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I appreciate you coming on the show and kind of spilling the insight of your whole process and stuff. Because I've read about it and, you know, seen your YouTube videos, but just you breaking it down and kind of really seeing your energy is kind of showing me really how you've gotten to this point, because you are very passionate and kind of nerd out about stuff, which is great.
Thank you. So are you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm really curious about just, you know, people who are full on taking these risks, you know. Like, I think that's a big thing about my guests. It's like, I became a fan instantly the same way I think everyone has hopped on and subscribed and got you to this point.
Sorry.
What are you laughing about?
I'm sorry. I thought you should say as far as content creators turned restaurateurs, you're one of the goats.
I've been getting grilled because I've been overusing goat a lot, but
you are a goat.
Thank you. You are. How many times have you said that today?
Yeah, I know, right?
He's saying it now. Sorry.
Have you been a fan of her content?
Yeah, I have. And it's funny because I feel like the content I saw first was like the long form.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Because maybe I wasn't doing, you know, like TikTok or YouTube shorts or whatever, mm-hmm. but these longer, like 20-minute videos. And it's like kind of interesting to be a little voyeuristic into somebody's life. Mm-hmm. I find that fascinating.
Well, I also like you being really honest about how much you've been you're experimenting, looking at the numbers and seeing what does well, you know, because I think a lot of YouTube creators are just like, oh, we put it out and it just blew up, you know? But no, like, you're actually dissecting all that.
Yeah, I think, like, it's Yeah, it's definitely been a very important part. Like, what am I, like, what's my point of differentiation? You know, what do I have to offer? Like, I clearly can't cook as well as these other chefs out there. Like, what can I do? Oh, maybe a little bit of storytelling. Like, I know how to edit a little better. Like, you know, maybe I'll, like, do this. So I think it's just a mixture. And, like, it's, I didn't always know this from the beginning. It's taken me 2 years to figure out who I am and what I need to do. And even now, I still have days where I'm like, what the f- am I doing? Like, I'm gonna die now. You know, I have those moments too, but it's all a learning process. As corny as it sounds.
Well, what's one piece of advice you'd give to a content creator?
One piece of advice that I would give to a content creator is that there's always going to be ebbs and flows. So ride out the waves, don't get phased out, and just keep pushing and believe in yourself. Because I think when you get riled into that, that's when it really gets you. And it's a longevity game.
Mm. Yeah, true. Well, Tina Choi, aka Doobie Bop, her restaurant Mija Soul is in Itaewon.
Good luck getting a table.
But yeah.
November maybe, I guess.
There's no point promoting this because you won't get a reservation. That's what I'm saying. I hope everyone gets to try it at some point. You know,
we might do a second location, more fast casual as well.
Things are moving fast.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Things are moving fast.
You know, we need it in Brooklyn, a good restaurant. So
New York is tough.
Yeah.
Very tough, but.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that part kind of scary? Because everyone says restaurants don't make profit until like after the second year or something like that. Is that that's a thing, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah, but we're making profit.
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
And, you know, I think the hardest part is actually, you know, my new role as a leader, like in a sense, like now I went from being a solo creator to now having 7 people that work for us and work with us as well. So that's the part that I think that's been the most challenging for me and like navigating myself. I'm also like horrible with paperwork and making sure everything is like filed in correctly. So it's all about getting the right people who can really like believe in your vision and like move forward. So that's been the most challenging part, but the most fulfilling part as well.
All right. Well, Tina, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate you. We are broadcasting live from Seoul. Stay tuned. Tune in next week for another episode of Fun with Tina Choi, Doobie Bop, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Tina.